It's nice to be with you, Susan, and we thought that this would be a wonderful opportunity for you to share your history that is unique. And as you know, six of us are going to South Africa, and we wanted to make sure that you were able to contribute that which represents your history and coming out of SRADID. And I'm just thinking that for those that will be meeting you for the first time through this particular recording, you could just maybe just give a brief background as you're coming to this assembly over 27 years ago, and then just lead into what you think is important for those counselors and therapists and even survivors, what you want them to hear about your history. That is, there are some similar points and characteristics, but you also have a unique way in which they hid a lot of stuff in you that we didn't even know it was there until clear at the end, I mean many years later. So it's been very tricky, and I think who you are as a person and what God has done in your life to bring you to where you are now is really important, and so I look forward to sharing whatever you feel is important. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a little town in the Midwest in the United States, a community of 200 people. My father owned a local business there, and just outwardly, I know now he's my surrogate father, but, you know, I just thought I had a pretty boring upbringing. Grew up in this little town, graduated, went to a state school where I started. After that, I began a teaching career, 30 years of teaching, and came to Morning Star, I think I was probably 28, when I started to come. I had gone to a few single groups and knew that I wasn't being fed there. I grew up in the small community in a denominational church where my father was an elder for several years. And so I was taken to church outwardly 2-3 times a week, and you would not suspect at all that there was any kind of ritual abuse in my life. The only real things I had growing up were severe migraine headaches all the way through high school. And going through college, I always did very well in my grades, but had a lot of anxiety around performance and doing the best that I could, and feeling a lot of pressure around that. After graduating, I just went through a series of floating around kind of from one man to another, and had a long history of being in immoral relationships. And in my late 20s, I wanted to turn back to the Lord. I started turning back and going to some of the churches, and the Lord was just creating in me a real hunger for the first time as an adult to pursue Him and to know His Word, which I wasn't getting in some of the groups that I was at. And a friend of mine brought me to Morning Star, and when I started hearing Doug teaching, he spoke very clearly from the Word. And the Word was really convicting me in my soul life as a presenter. And all I could do at that point was just starting, stay put, listen, and let the Word do the work that needed to be done on that level. The Lord allowed me to sit there and to learn and to participate for almost 7 years. Then we went through that kind of outward cleansing where we all came in and just did open confession of our past sins and what we knew open, you know, in the outside realm. And after 7 years of being there, going to Friday night prayer for all those years, I still struggled every Friday night thinking that my flesh was just dying very hard because I would just scream out during those times. And I think it was Sally that started first coming out with dissociation and manifesting in parts, and a couple of parts to you, and you started seeing and doing research and started digging in your heels to find out what was going on in our midst. I came a few months after that. There were a couple of others that started opening up. I mainly came in at that point because I could sense a deep sense of pride in myself that I didn't even know the roots of. I just knew it was there. And I had experienced a lot of spiritual deadness and knew there had to be more to Christianity than I was able to experience at that point, even after hearing and growing in the Word. And we started doing some counseling. The first things that came up were on a local level, but they were ritual abuse memories right from the beginning. I started out with an experience in a barn and seeing masks and things like that.
Now, how about there was a certain amount of time that elapsed before you began to be in touch with the fact that there were a number of others in the assembly. There were a cult involved, and our whole history in Tulsa for 29 years, the majority of those rituals took place at Oral Roberts University.
Yes.
And so were you coming into touch with being involved and connected with there?
Mm-hmm. Because my early memories started out in my little local community, but then I also grew up 20 miles from an Air Force base, which was only an hour from another major Air Force base in our state. And the memories that I started having kind of expanded from local then to Tulsa, to Oral Roberts. And there were a lot of Indian type rituals because he had an Indian background, mm-hmm. based in Oklahoma, huge spiritual base.
Mm-hmm.
So I was coming into a lot of kind of Indian ritualistic type things there. And it wasn't, a lot of my first memories too is Sally's memory started unfolding around her position as a Nephilim mother in the prophet position. I started opening into a lot of memories similar to hers. I'm 4.5 years younger than she was, and I started sensing that I was being groomed for that position.
Did you say you're younger than she? Older.
Older.
Okay.
I'm
that's
older, 4.5 years older.
That's right.
And I started coming into a sense that I was being groomed for that position, but then failed at 13 to be able to produce that, and went through just a traumatic time around 13 of failing my father, which at that point I didn't mention he was of European royalty. I knew that. And I was just coming into that Oldenburg core when a man entered into the assembly, unconscious to me, who was a brother, as I was dissociated.
Kim George Oldenburg.
And he...
Now, he was there, I'll just interject, he was there about 10 years, moved in right alongside of me. He replaced another man by the name of Wayne that was there before in leadership, and he came in alongside and was real close to in the counseling process, very articulate. In fact, his home was used for survivors when they would come for a week of counseling. They all met in his home with his wife, in his apartment. I wouldn't say apartment, but it was a special facility that he had for when people come for counseling. It was in his on his property. So he was there as a representation of your bloodline long before we knew it. And it was Connie that first recognized that this Kim George, and I won't mention his last name because it has another name, but she was the first to identify him as Kim George Oldenburg.
And so I had no idea at that time. I just remember the first time he took me home, I wanted to jump out of the car, but had no idea why, and did not recognize him as a brother. That core of me really was pretty buried after that, came in to bury that. I still kind of hung on to who my father was around that time, but I'm really a good example of the onion that's had so many different layers. And one thing I would like to say that I forgot was that when I, for 2.5 years, I only presented through my presenter.
Yeah,
you saw no parts of me for 2.5 years.
Yeah, let me just comment on that, because if people, therapists or counselors, if they've seen the film Sybil and see the obvious switching between parts, that's not the norm. The norm, according to Dr. Richard Clough, is that the switching is very clandestine, so that even it's not even aware in the presenting person. But when I first met Susan, I thought she basically just had ego states. I had no idea that she had just as much complex, dissociative phenomenon in her internal world as anyone else. I didn't see it, and it It completely passed by my detection for a long time. I thought, as I said, that she basically had eagle states. And as Susan continues on with her history, at some point it'll be really important for those viewing this to see where she is now and what it, in terms of her awareness, how she was used as a Nephilim mother, or breeder, etc. You know, how did she get to where she is now? Because it was very hidden. In fact, when I think about the process that you've gone through since you've been here in Syracuse, Susan, just what you've gone through, to get to where you are now, it is different. And that which represents your position that you were groomed to fulfill, to function as a mother and wife of the prophet, the false prophet. We're not saying that you are, but at least is a representation that you are a bloodline representation of a mother and wife of a prophet. That was very hidden, and it wasn't even until this year that we got behind all the other Nephilim kind of experiences you had as a mother on one side to a very deeply hidden core. Mm-hmm. And I totally missed it. I mean, I missed it. For all these years, I had no idea that this level of investment was in you. But I should have, I kept asking myself the question, why is this close connection with Dan, who is the son of King George VII, why was this bond closer than anyone else in the assembly? And now it makes sense, that you two were so closely twinned or enmeshed together. So you pick up the story wherever you want to, but I felt like I needed to bring that in because from a counselor's standpoint, even a therapist or one who was doing the testing for dissociation, I don't know they would have seen anything.
No, I don't think so either. And we worked and worked on trying to bask, getting the behavior and the affect and the senses and the knowledge all together. And I just couldn't do it. I mean, we would set up all kinds of scenarios, and for the most part, I would sit there and describe just horrific things, mm-hmm. being a perpetrator, but I might have a couple of tears. Usually I'd have tears out of one side of my face, not mm-hmm. the other. I might have a little tear. And so there just weren't the signs that you were seeing from other people or the level of demonization that you had to deal with some of the others. And so I looked pretty, quote, mild mm-hmm. compared to a lot of people. And I think it's because I was so closed up inward, and it's been so hard for me to get it all out. That's not an excuse, but part of it is my personality, mm-hmm. I think, too, which I was going to talk about later. But I wanted to say some of the first memories that came out that made me realize my parents were not my real parents. I started getting memories of a mogul media person out in California. I don't know if I should say
that. Yeah, go ahead.
Hearst. Yeah. Randolph Hearst. And actually, that took me back to 3 years old, which began my American history, because I came to the States at three. And so my first memories outside of my surrogate family took me back to that point when I was brought to the United States.
And this is the rituals that took place at Hearst Castle, San Simeon, California.
He died the year I came over.
Okay.
So that was connected with his death. I was there and part of the
with
death
ritual. With William Randolph Hearst. We know, I think it's his granddaughter or someone, Patty Hearst, that was definitely a program.
Right.
We know that. But go ahead.
And there was still some embalmment there. So the first layer that I got to, and I can remember at one point thinking, oh, I'm Hearst. That's as far as I could go back to. And I was baptized then, too, in my presenter name and being prepared to be placed in my presenter family in the Midwest. So I could only go back to being Hearst for a long time. And I think this is characteristic of me, too. I kind of go through a layer, and I think I'm integrated. And, I've integrated around that layer for a while. And I've gone through periods of time in just functioning, going to school. In my 30-year career, I've continued to work and never hardly missed a day of work or anything like that. I appear to be kind of spacey, maybe a little ADD, but was also maintaining a well-respected job, position. And didn't look that bad. My life was just not that bad. I didn't have outward signs of an eating disorder, going to the hospital, you know, things like that either.
Yeah, self-abuse, cutting, things like
that. No, I just didn't have all of that. Mainly I experienced spiritual death a lot. I just couldn't make a connection with God, even though I kept going to church. I was faithful to attend, to grow, and be there when the doors were open and everything, but not go to church, but to go to assembly. And that I just think spiritual death has characterized me all the way through the journey, and Dan as well. We were really linked together in that. And Dan's just really beginning to break free of that, and it's been a hope that that's coming for me pretty quickly here. But seeing the throne positions and what has remained in me, I now know why I've been experiencing that level of spiritual death all these years. And so that's real important, because Doug has been so criticized of making us all DID, and if you're a counselor, you're going, I'm sure some of you have been accused of that. And I almost, even when he told me, I just had ego states, part of me kind of responded, that's what he thinks. You know, I just kept hearing these little voices, and yet it took a long time before I trusted you enough to let you see it part.
Yeah.
And
well, I think it's, you know, I know you have some things to share there, and you're certainly free to do that. I think what would really be important, because people's attention can only take in so much, is that if we look at the last major stronghold that you had to get in touch with, it's these, you have, you know, mother bond with a child is as strong as, you know, we know in the natural realm, but then there's also marriage bonds. And so the way they have this structured is that you're groomed and conditioned up to 13 to where you conceive and then give birth to these one of these hybrid entities. You had others that were kind of shielding around in another part of you to hide an actual prophet entity that we just got in touch with. And the reason why it's so protected is that in the deepest part of your identity, you have a mother bond with this entity, and then later on they join you together in marriage, so that there is a wife bond, a one flesh bond. This came at the end. I mean, this is 27 years later, and we now are getting to this bonding. And you went a whole history of going through whatever you went through in terms of, you mentioned layers, all the DID structuring, and now we get down to just the most recent connection in your life is this mother bond, wife bond. And it's very strong. So could you just address, before you pick up wherever you're going to go next, is why do you think that was so hidden? I mean, why is this such a challenge for you as a person? Because they evidently know how to hide this psychologically in terms of internal defenses and all the various structuring. The programmers know this, and of course Satan, who's working behind the scenes, working through hybrids who are also programmers, they understand these psychological dynamics. But could you address what you just got in touch with and why it took so long to get there?
Well, I'd have to go back to the fact that we only moved to New York 5 years ago. Even before that time, I never even knew I was a Nephilim mother. I just knew that I had some human sons in the occult.
You weren't supposed to know.
I wasn't supposed to know. No, I wasn't.
So being an Nephilim mother was very hidden from even from you as a
So I couldn't get to the bonds, or wasn't aware of the bonds, because I didn't think at that point I was a Nephilim mother. And part of this, as far as it's something we've had to grow in together, because up to the time that we were in Tulsa, you had maybe worked with three women that you kind of characterized as Nephilim mothers. And as we talked about, they manifested totally different than I did.
Yeah.
So you only had the framework and the context of what you thought a Nephilim mother looked like.
I disqualified you. I said, you don't fit the profile of what I know. And so that just reinforced whatever was in you, so that you would never even think you needed to look there.
No, and you just had a framework for it. And you even said, I get a little leery of somebody that comes in thinking you're trying to tell me they are. You know, and that's kind of I came in one time just before we came to New York and asked your permission to let a little part out that thought she was a Nephilim mother. I asked you first, well, I have a part that thinks she is, so can we just let her be here?
Well, knowing what I know now, I would have followed that trail.
You should have. Yeah, you know. I mean, that's okay. There's not.
No, and I would just say this.
We're doing this for counselors.
Yeah, I mean, if people think, well, this Nephilim mother thing is a Doug Ridge phenomenon, this is just the opposite. I was naturally resistant to thinking that, you know, someone's a Nephilim mother just because they're starting to talk about it. And so it's just the opposite of the way I've been characterized.
Well, it's kind of the same whole issue with DID as a whole. Some counselors are told it's very rare, and now we're finding out it's very common. Yeah. It took Diane coming here to open up the Nephilim Project. Mm-hmm. And when you
started the Genesis Project,
when you began to see it as a project and expanding out from her, then you came back to me. But that's only been like 3 years ago.
That's right.
And I remember the day you called me and said that if I had been skipped, that would probably be an exception. And I just burst into tears.
When you say skipped, what does skipped mean?
If I was not a part of that project, I would be an exception.
Like what's been called the Nephilim Mother Project.
With, right. Yeah, okay. From what you were seeing.
Yeah.
And that's where I want to bring up my character, because you're not supposed to compare yourself, but I've seen others like Connie and Sally burst through this. But my character is such that I haven't had really been enough core or even neshama, that my testimony has been very, I've lacked confidence in my own testimony of hearing myself, knowing how to interpret myself.
Plus, every time there's been an access, you've been discredited, you're a liar, no one would ever believe you. That's all been reinforced.
That's always reinforced. But it's kind of like Sally has a very strong personality and had to break through tons of stuff to get where she was. But I didn't have enough strength, I don't think even ego strength, to stand up for myself.
Yeah.
And it was just so easy for me to say, okay, well, now Sally has this position, this wouldn't be my position, you know, and just to hide behind other people, working through things with Dan. Dan was very confident in things that he expressed, and sometime I think we have addressed a lot of things around brothers and sisters that he and I had to work through. But again, I take my identity or let others define me, because I haven't been able to stand on my own. And so prior to in Tulsa, I really only got to my links with Sally and with Dan. Then when we came here and you could see the expansion of the Genesis Project, then I started getting my memories of being a Nephilim mother.
Yeah,
and again, I had to wait for permission.
Yeah.
To be that.
And when Susan mentions the expansion of the Nephilim or Genesis Project, it was seeing the pervasiveness, and I finally came to the recognition that Satan has a MO, modus operandi, and the question is, since the hybrid breeding program is the number one asset for him creating an end-time army, and of course to ultimately wipe out anything that's potentially redeemable, why would he skip anyone of your level of investment, having come out of the European royalty? It didn't make sense at some point, and it wasn't. You have to just come to the conclusion. There's no logical reason why Satan would bypass you.
And like you said, I'd already established a lot of links to Dan. We had seen that connection, and that as a female, I was probably brought in at the earliest of ages to bond only with him. You know, that was the main bond that was engineered in my life. Because prior to that, the first few months of my life now, I know, after getting into the Nephilim, was the bonding with the spirits, the dark spirits, and just like everybody else who's a Nephilim mother, your bonds, earliest bonds, are going to be to the spirits. To prepare you for those mother bonds with the Nephilim later on.
Mm-hmm. So why do they select Dan for you to have this foundational bond with him? He represents something, and so other than who he is as a human being, you're bonded to Dan for what reason?
I'm bonded with him as a link to the extension of Nimrod Alexander's spirit in him.
The actual ancient, we're talking about the actual, the O'Collins bloodline. We now believe the Lord has, in various ways, linked the O'Collins all the way back to Nimrod himself. So with Dan, you're directly linked generationally with Nimrod, mm-hmm. who is a representation of the current Antichrist.
And I was kind of on a human level. We were allowed to bond and were kind of manipulated to for me to represent a bride position, a satanic bride position. And I was also a link from Dan to the Nephilim, because Dan hasn't had direct interfacing with the Nephilim. He links through to the Nephilim through the women, with me being one of those main links. And I knew after I started seeing my role with the Nephilim that I was a vessel of that spirit back to him.
Yeah. When you say linked, other ways we've come to see this is the bond is both spiritual, psychological, physiological. It is symbiotic. It is a sharing in a common life. It is deeply embedded in your psyche and your, even though attached to the human spirit, your very identity. These bonds. I think the bonds are the very foundation of all the programming, and I think the bonding even comes into the realm of the human spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
It's very, very deep, and you can deal with all kinds of programming, you can deal with all kinds of altar systems, and never even touch this.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
And so that's how I was specifically groomed with Dan. Mm-hmm. But that was also being preparation to be a base of power for Diane as that bride position as well, because we know that it's passed forward, you know, to the other next generation. So what they were downloading on me in relationship to Dan in that preparing me in that bride position was then forwarded to Diane as well and downloaded on
it. It was transferable. I mean, you're a bloodline link. Diane brings in the new bloodline link so that Genesis 6:2 mm-hmm. is to whomever they choose, and where before it was more the way to select a Nephilim mother, it had to be a bloodline. Now, converging through you and some of the other women, and then coming into Diane is now opens the door in this generation to all the women, just like we have in Genesis 6.
Mm-hmm. And so that was really important, because I was used towards Diane. I mean, as she was the infant, I was used to download what was already invested in me to her.
Yeah, so like a template.
Right. I was a template for the bride in her life. And I think the only reason, wanted to cover some points of kind of what has happened since we've moved here to New York, because the Lord has had to do a lot just showing me the weaknesses of my own character and how it's easier for me just to remain hidden than to want to be out front. And yet internally there are those of me, parts of me that have been very invested in wanting to achieve this, attaining to this, as I said before, at 13, it was like a turning point. When I didn't achieve that goal, then I became active in pursuing it. And
I just want to say something, the interjection, is that in all the time I worked with you, I've never seen what would be classically a switch into another part representing your system. It's always just looked like you, only in distress. And if I didn't know that dissociation takes on a particular signature of a particular phenomenology unique to each person, then, you know, as I do now, I mean, I can understand why I missed it in the early stages, because all I saw was Sally. She's obviously switching in different parts. Your switching has all been covert. And you talk about other parts. This is all covert. And even you, as Susan, the presenter, I don't even know if you were aware of it.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah. And it's real tricky.
And when you've worked with other people over years, and I've sat in thousands of hours of counseling with you, with others, then I can, you know, we all can start identifying different parts in people. And you might notice me switch, but very few of you could say, oh, that's so-and-so and Susan, or that's so-and-so. I haven't had clearly defined parts.
Yeah, I can only I can detect it when I beliefs, particular mindset and attitude. I can say that's not quite Susan, but it's just when you talk, I'm able to pick up on it. Mm-hmm. It's not an obvious visual thing.
No, it's not. And so I don't know if that's because of the level of polyfragmentation.
I think that's part of it. And because people are, Dr. Richard Clough said the majority of people who are dissociative, the switching is covert rather than obvious and overt.
Because I know that when I switch in the realm of the occult, I have very defined parts.
Yeah.
And others have seen that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But to come out in counseling, you're not going to see those defined parts.
That's really important.
It is.
In counseling, you're not going to come out and see those defined parts. Because
yeah,
denial's there, you're not really one of these people, you're not all that important, so that's a nice little cushion and barrier between these defined parts and who you are as the amnesiac presenter.
Because Diane has reported me on the Nephilim Council of Mothers, mm-hmm, and she sees me as a very different personality than the one she lives with, mm-hmm, you know? So others know how definite I can be, mm-hmm, in the right circumstances. But I think moving here was strategic. I knew in Tulsa I lived alone, and I felt like I'm not going to get out of this. If I continue to live alone, there's something's got to break. Because I think it was so hidden in me that I kind of knew it wasn't going to be detected apart from living in a community.
That's important.
So when we moved to New York, three of us, Sally and Juliana and myself, bought a home here and committed to living together. And for Sally, that's been probably one of the biggest tests of her life, because she had just come to a level of freedom in her own life just to move into a place with, go back to the leopards, you know, moving in with those who are still occult active.
Yeah.
I could just speak for myself, not really, but I definitely was still active. And not only that, but I more or less stepped into the role that Sally had.
When she walked out,
you know, I was already previously groomed, but as she was walking in freedom and walking out, then I stepped right back into that role, and it continued to move forward and culminate in 2000 with the conception of twins. And those twins kind of represented a culmination of my Antichrist Nimrod position with Dan, because one was in the Antichrist position, and the grooming that I had and the meshment with Sally around the prophets.
It was the Alexander.
So there was the conception of twins late in my life, right at the end of my childbearing years. And I never knew about those sons until Diane came and lived with us. And it's only been even like within the last 2 months, I think, that she started reporting, seeing me at the birth of her son and being given a baby, an infant. And that's the first time I even knew about this set of twins. And I didn't even know about the second one until this last
week. It's very hidden. And who do you understand the father of these entities?
Satan.
Okay, so this is very common. I think it's important that you pick up on that. The angels that sinned in Genesis 6, according to 2 Peter 2:4 and Jude 6, they are now incarcerated. So Satan has been placed in a double bind in this last generation. He has to do what he must do. It's all or nothing. You know, some logic of some people would say, well, why would Satan do that knowing the outcome? Well, if you're placed in a double bind by the Most High, he's got to do what he has to do to set the stage for Armageddon, and he has no other option. So the right across the board, everyone is reporting that these first generation hybrids are being produced by Satan, and I'm not saying there's not other fallen angels involved in this process, but he is the principal entity, and so this is another indication that we are in the final generation before Jesus Christ returns.
Now, I hadn't covered other Nephilim sons prior to this.
There were different principalities.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, because I had twins around the prophet, I had twins around the Antichrist, and twins around the dragon.
So these were all shielding this deeper position in you.
Yeah, I have uncovered like 16 hybrids, or I mean, Nephilim hybrids, you know, during this history. But then these two final ones were hidden.
Yeah, and what you're saying is these other 16, that was in another part of you as a mother and wife, that this final breaking in is a part of you, mother and wife, that was completely separate from the other part of your identity,
right,
as mother and wife.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is a supernatural architecture. This is not human engineering.
No. Oh, it isn't.
Yeah.
And so I thought my history had been pretty well finalized until Diane reported that last one. And it's just been...
Last one what?
In 2000.
Okay.
2002, actually, I was presented with it. That's tricky. They were conceived in 2000 by me, but birthed by another individual in 2002, 6 months prior to the birth of her son, because it is a false prophet position.
Okay.
So
yeah, good.
That's key.
Yeah, a lot of people they're going to say, you know, I need to, you know, unpack that a little bit more. But at least it's presented, and those will be seeing this in the future. We can do a follow up if we need to, because this is really very complex. But God, when He's allowed to direct the process, He's not confused by any of this. He says that He will catch those that are in their cleverness. He will catch them in their cleverness. So what God has allowed, He takes responsibility to help you and people like myself and other counselors know what we need to know to get out. So it's not how smart we are.
No.
As we depend on the Lord, He shows us the complexity of the adversary. And when He shows us, it's really simple because it's Him showing us. Daniel 2:22, God knows what's in the darkness and He reveals profound and hidden things. Go ahead.
But I had to stress that move to New York and moving in together, because I think unless people had lived with me 24/7, and especially Sally being as sensitive as she is, I knew that Sally and I were living with the spirit. I thought of her son, because I didn't know about that it was my son, actually. She knew, but I didn't. And when she would try to tell me or push me forward, we just kind of would clash.
Mm-hmm.
And it really took Diane coming here and living. Then she moved into our house, and that's when the crisis hit. And that was the mm-hmm. next big thing for me. I mean, crisis. There's been difficult times throughout my whole history. But it came to a point where she started reporting me and current activity, and things just started culminating to the point where she and Sally actually had to make a decision to move down to your house for 3 months, because they really couldn't be around this anymore or feel safe around me.
Well, I think the other side of that is that by being removed out of the dynamics, it would put you in a position where you're going to have to see what's going on in your life, so that you're not bouncing off these
mm-hmm.
two.
And I had to.
Yeah.
But that was a crisis for me, because I'm saying that's what it took to throw me into crisis, and to see that how I was affecting my sisters to yeah. that point. It really took that, them moving out, and then for me to get to the floor, even though I'd called out to the Lord to make it a life and death situation for me, it really didn't get that way until they moved out. And then it's just as if my Christian presenter, my nice facade, start falling apart. And I just
and that's
started
really
coming
good.
Undone.
That what you said is so important. That has to happen to everyone. It happened to you, Dan. That Christian presenter breaks down so that these deep core issues that are so hidden can begin to emerge, and it's very undoing, obviously.
And then I started getting into the current activity and the bonds. The bonds to these creatures, the sexual bonds, the mother bonds, and even to the point of just this entity, this son completes me. And just hearing myself, this is like, he completes me. And hearing yourself say that after all these years of being in church, being in assembly, I know church, I'm sorry, but the church is not a place. But being in assembly, growing under your teaching, Teos and Sparks, all this wonderful, tremendous infilling of the Word, and to hear myself say that this entity completes me is my completion.
Well, yes, it's an idol. It's like this entity is a living idol that is there to displace God.
And just my submissiveness to Him and my love bonds with Him and getting down to these bonds that were created even at my birth towards that end, and having to accept the fact that I've been active up to this point in my life, 60 years of seeing the Lord robbed of His full inheritance in me, and He's just had to bring me here.
Yeah.
He's had to bring me here.
Yeah.
And it's needed to happen, and I've had to, even at this point too, though, I think for any survivor or counselor, I think the biggest test has been sometimes around me here at the end, because you and Lori had known me for 25 years now, and what a test it's meant to you to see all this coming out now.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a real test for you.
And see, what you're seeing is there's still some trauma bonds there, which is, because some of this stuff is pretty fresh around mother bond and wife bonds of the son. There's still some more that needs to be done to release some of this bonding at a deep emotional level, and I can tell by your reaction it's still there, but what is undone is undone, and so that is just prepared the way for us to do a little follow-up after this to get to some of those emotions that are still affected. When, as soon as you start talking about bonding, then that was, you were giving evidence that there's some more work that we can do. So I need to comment on that, because as a therapist or counselor, you need to pay attention to body language and what's going on, because this is a gateway to be able to excavate whatever would remain of any bonds there. And by the way, these sons, they are the closest proxy ties with Satan himself. In other words, if you have a bond with these hybrids, it is a proxy bond with Satan himself.
It is.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And I think what I'm realizing through all of this has been my inability to bond with the body.
Mm-hmm.
And having these bonds stripped away, I'm just kind of at that point, you know, as far, I have to say this, as far as your trip to Africa, to me this seems like the worst possible time that you all could pack up and leave.
I have
to say that. And yet, I know it's God's sovereignty and His timing, because I know that during this 3 weeks, there's just myself and Juliana and Connie's husband. It's felt like, even though there's been limitation, you all are my family. It feels like you're packing up and leaving.
We got Skype, you know.
And the Lord yet has been really using it to get down to these bonding issues. And so I can see that there is a great need for some of that to be filled in.
Yeah.
But also the displacement of where those bonds have been.
See, that capacity to bond at this level on a spiritual, neshama level, if that's still bonded with your son, then that God-given capacity is not able to connect properly, not only with God, but with the other members of the body of Christ. You need that capacity.
And I've seen that limitation, and as others have come free, like Dan over the last few months, coming into a joy and a relationship with the Lord, it's just creating in me such a jealousy to have that.
Good. That's a godly jealousy.
And it's like, Lord, I've got to have that. I've just got to have that. And so,
that's healthy.
I know that all of this is in God's sovereign timing, but I think, especially for us going through this as a group, there's been that with which the Lord has had to create in me. He's had to let me wear out every resource that I could in myself, because
mm-hmm.
He's not going to come in and save a person until they've come to the end of themselves.
Mm-hmm. And all the psychological defenses that are in the DID structure that are part of your survival conditioning, your survival responses, all those defenses come forward, have to be identified and surrendered to the fact that it's not working.
Yeah.
It's a survival mechanism or dissociative response to trauma does not work at this level. And so God allows it to break down, allows you to go through the distress, so you can really get in touch with your more of your real core self. That is, we've been trapped in, we've been born and conditioned to be completely involved with idolatry.
Yeah, and seeing the full extent of that. One of the things I looked through this morning that I would encourage everyone to look at again, if you haven't, is that Orphan Spirit book that Amanda made available through her ministry. I looked through that again this morning, and I have to
That's on Canaan Ministries, K-A-N-A-A-N Ministries in South Africa. Under resources or somewhere in there, she has an article or a PDF download called Orphan Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
I think it's about 40 pages. I don't know if you did it all, Amanda, or somebody else helped, but it just clearly defines what it means. And she was making the statement that Satan became the greatest orphan when he fell.
Mm.
And he wants to inflict that spirit on the body of Christ. He wants us to live as orphans.
And all the rejection.
Right. She goes through with charts and defines what it looks like to live under the orphan spirit,
mm-hmm.
what it looks like to enter under the live under the spirit of the Father.
Mm-hmm. Spirit of adoption. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And as I was going through there, it was just like, oh, Amanda, this is me. This is me. This has been my history. This is me, and all the ways that you look to others to fill that emptiness of the Father.
Mm-hmm.
But she's made the comment that the orphan spirit cannot be cast out, but it has to be displaced through personal experience in the Father's love and the revelation of the spirit of sonship.
Wow, that's great.
And I'm beginning to see more of the transference as she was going through those charts. As she listed those charts, I could see, well, the Lord's working here. He's working here. He's working here. But for the most part of my life, I would say I've been under and living out from the orphan spirit, apart from the Lord.
And Dan has shared that too. You know, that I think all of you are, because instead of having a normal bond with a mother and childhood, it's already orchestrated to be bonded with principalities and then, of course, trauma bonded with the abusers. So, de facto, just as a result of all the conditioning and what you've been born into, it's not just a spirit, but it is your whole identity is rendered really fatherless. That is, in the sense, you've never had a nurturer, a provider, a protector, or a caretaker, a caregiver, like a father should be. It's just a huge vacuum.
Yeah, and I looked to Dan. You know, I was groomed to look to Dan as the big brother, mm-hmm. as the savior. I've looked to you. I've mm-hmm. looked to others, as I said, to gain my identity from others,
mm-hmm.
rather than to be defined in who I am. And I really couldn't be. We were just worked on that. I mean, just this weekend, around getting to who I am as the mother of this last position of the prophet, mm-hmm. this last son. And just, it's not like that's what defines me, but I have to, for a moment, be defined by that to get my humanity out of that, my neshma out of that, and just say, okay, this is who I am, so let's go into that. This is who I am. And
you go into that which is dissociated so that it can become reassociated in your present life.
To get more of me here and my essence here, so that then the Lord can find me. So it's all about getting back your neshama.
Because the enemy's a thief. He's stolen this and he's held on to it. As long as there's still dissociation in your life, then you're not complete, and he's holding on to that part of yourself. And as long as that's separate, that mindset can't change unless that's integrated into your present.
And I've really, the biggest enemy all along has been me. I mean, it's all, your whole system is held by conflict. And even just the last few weeks, we've been working around the throne of Satan, but right next to that was the throne of the Christ of the new bloodline. And so I was trying to fight the throne of Satan from a position you know, united with the throne of this false Christ.
Yeah, you're thinking it's Christ on that side of you, fighting Satan, but actually It's yin and yang, light and dark, and it has the same source.
And that's characteristic of the prophet all the way through.
It's the Hegelian dialectic and how the internal world is kept in conflict based on the Hegelian dialectic.
And
Satan
he's
the author of the, it wasn't Hegel, it was Satan's the author of the Hegelian dialectic.
So until you get to these throne positions and get your humanity out from them, then you're at war with yourself, which I have been for most of my life, and I'm real thankful for having this opportunity to just kind of share things. I think I think Dan would probably be able to fill others in, but I think the only significant thing that maybe I haven't discussed was around seeing that we had sisters and brothers, and how much that was able to be cleared, how much that cleared out when we were able to cut ourselves off.
Yeah.
And to see those connections with sisters and identical sisters and brothers, especially the way they were used with Dan and I.
Yeah, we plan on covering that in South Africa because that's very important. Dan had at least three, there's probably more throughout the history, we'll just say three that were still living that are identical twins, triplets. You had
seven,
but they kind of structure into three primaries. And these bonds, these symbiotic bonds, these generational bonds, these human bonds connect you with these people who are cult active, and part of your identity is seen as them. You're in them and they're in you through infant trauma bonding, and so what happens when they're in rituals, a lot of this transfers to you until these bonds are broken. Then these proxy relationships and proxy rituals and proxy connections with hybrids and Satan, they're transferred to you. It's like they could go to a ritual and it's like you just went to a ritual. You know, and if those bonds are broken, your identity is so enmeshed and symbiotically tied, and through them to whoever they're linked with, it becomes very complex. And so that just reinforces the importance of identifying all the bonding that is there, starting right at birth and then right again at new birth is reinforced. We're going to cover all that. But yeah, this will take a whole session in of itself of dealing with these sisters and twinning, and what they call it twinning, but it's, you know, triplets or whatever you want to call it. So yeah, that's real important, and we're going to try to cover that the best we can. But the fact that you emphasize that, it's really important.
And I think for us, for me to come out, there's been that which the Lord had to form in me. There's been that which I think the Lord had to do in Dan because of the connection with Dan. And I just know that as he has come out, things have broken off of me like crazy.
Yes. Yeah.
And so there has been that connection as well. That's not an excuse, but I see the sovereignty of God. I just think of that game where you build the tower with blocks, and then you want to try to remove the blocks and keep the tower remaining. Well, the Lord has the reverse strategy. Satan has built his tower, his web, and the Lord is actively pulling out those key positions that will bring the kingdom down.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, especially here, because we've been networked, this is unique. This is probably unique to most what counselors are going to be working with on an individual basis.
Right.
But ours has been a corporate.
It's a network.
It is a network. And so I just see that the Lord hasn't been in a hurry necessarily to just work with this person, but it's been a corporate movement, especially here at the end. I think we can all see that. And it's his sovereign timing and his sovereign will to unfold things as he has.
Mm-hmm.
And just because we have represent a corporate position here in this satanic web, I think the Lord has had us on a long journey to get this undone. We don't know the impact that has on the whole structure, but trusting in his sovereignty, and even as a counselor, you've had to learn to ask the Lord to strategically bring you those people that he knows are strategic to bringing this down, or you can be flooded if you haven't.
You know, remember
the years we spent dealing with everybody, and then narrowing it down. But I just see that for us, it's been a corporate movement, not only just in bringing down the satanic kingdom, but also as the Lord has been increasing in our midst,
yeah.
to be able to go into some of these fortified areas. And that as Dan has come alongside you, along that in that role of an elder beside you, where there's been conflict between you two over the years, it's really meant a lot to me to see the two of you moving in together to take down these strongholds in me.
Yeah.
And I just want to bear witness and testimony to what that meant.
Well, that's good, yeah.
To seeing that being undone by the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've been going through this study on divine love, and just, I think...
The book she's referring to is Divine Love by Pastor Otto Stockmayer. It can be found on Three Brothers' website, and it's very much worth anyone's consideration, but go ahead.
I mean, you may have something else that comes to your mind, but one thing that I have seen here in our midst, in ever-growing in our home situation, even with Sally, first couple of years of living with me, she had to go through some really rough times with the Lord, and had to wonder what he was up to. But as I saw her persevering with the Lord and calling upon him to be that expression of forbearing love with her, and as she has taken that shift and standing before the Lord on my behalf, I've seen the forbearing of the Lord working through her and being a demonstration to those principalities in me in a living way. And for the response that I've seen in you and Lori, as I've had to come forward and say, okay, I was just accessed again last week.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that love being expressed over and over to someone that has kind of felt like a Judas in your midst, you know.
Yeah, well, the love, one of the last attributes of divine love, as mentioned to Paul and 1 Corinthians 13, is love endures all things.
But I just wanted to read this paragraph for counselors. If you, the Lord puts you on a long journey with somebody like me, just to keep this in mind. It says, let us never forget to put the shoes from off our feet when dealing thus with a brother or sister. It is holy ground, holy because we approach a being in whom Christ dwells unseen, and for me it's been unseen a lot, and much may depend on the attitude we take towards him in helping to bring forth in our brother the features of the Lord Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so just what it means to persevere with the Lord through this and to follow the Lord's instincts and not the instincts of the counselee, because as I said, there's been times that I thought I was done, and I think those living around me knew that I wasn't, and to keep persevering through to God's end.
So. Well, good, thank you. I know that this is brief. I mean, this in no way can encapsulate and represent the whole of your life, Susan. I think it's a good introduction, and it's going to fill in and represent a piece that the others will not have because of your own uniqueness. So I think your reference to Sally, her perseverance in travail, anguish and travailing prayer over seeing the captivity in you before you saw it,
mm-hmm.
and being that link with God to see you come to where you are now, it's important to have to understand that the body of Christ has to function in a way where we enter his sufferings and his travail if we're going to see others get out. And I appreciate you making that reference to Sally. There's others that travail, and now you will be more in a place to travail for others that do not have the freedom that you have. So I appreciate taking the time, and I'm looking forward to making this available to those that we're meeting in South Africa. So whoever watches this, blessings in the name of the Lord Jesus.
Maybe next time I'll be there to meet you all in person.
Yes.